The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
The latest rural crime figures are in, and they don't look good.
Putting your tractor in a wooden shed just doesn't work these days. Machinery is so expensive, it's obviously worth taking a risk to steal it.
We'll hear from a Lincolnshire farmer, the NFU and the police, and there's more on diversification as we pick the brains of business advice company Investec.
I think the pressures facing the farming community at the moment means that they've almost felt obliged to look for other income streams coming in.
Plus livestock and grain market reports, the week's farming news and weather.
The week in agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Well done to everyone who spread the word on Farm 24. A huge response again last week. It's a brilliant campaign. A very good morning to you. I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, straw is likely to be in short supply this year, with the wheat area expected to be 9% lower than 2023. Barley is looking a bit better though, up 6% on last year, and straw is currently trading at around £120 an acre. After a slow start, Harvest 2024 now seems to be progressing well thanks to the better weather, according to AHDB's first progress report. 85% of winter barley is complete, almost double this time last year. 73% of oilseed rape is done. Early yield and quality indications are very variable. Alice Killen from Openfield will have some numbers for us on her market report at the end of the programme. And congratulations to Nicholas Watts from Vinehouse Farm at Spalding, Graham Lowry, Tom Lamb in Stamford, and Nick Johnson from JSE Systems, all finalists in the British Farming Awards. Good luck, and I'll see you at the NEC on October the 17th. Last week we heard from three local farmers who've successfully diversified their businesses. They and others we spoke to all said that getting professional advice was key to their success. So we got business advice firm Investec on this week in part two of our summer special on diversification. Scott Jones is Divisional Director at Investec, who interviewed 100 farmers in April, and all those surveyed said they're trying alternatives to their traditional farming activities. That's quite a statistic, Scott. Why do you think that is?
I think the pressures facing the farming community at the moment means that they've almost felt obliged to look for other income streams coming in. And we didn't have any preconceptions when we commissioned the research, but it was quite a remarkable statistic that actually all of them that were surveyed were looking at alternative forms of income. And I think with rising cost pressures, that is gathering a sense of momentum. But what it's shown is, and I think this sort of runs through all of our research, a remarkable entrepreneurial spirit within the farming community as well, that are reaching out for other areas to ensure that they can continue to farm their land, albeit in a perhaps a slightly different methods in certain areas of it.
Would you say it's a negative or a positive? In other words, are they doing it because they've got to, because they're not earning enough from their traditional farming, or is it being seen as maybe spreading the risk?
I think it's an element of spreading the risk, and certainly there seemed to be a real desire to look for other income streams coming in. I think the positives that come from it is an awful lot of areas that are going in to or diversification of its income are actually quite environmentally friendly as well. And I think that side of it shows that the ability to get additional income in doesn't have to come at a cost to the environment with it. So I would say, Steve, a positive overall with it, albeit perhaps circumstances in some cases through rising costs has forced a hand a little.
Are there any particular areas of diversification or are areas that farmers are diversifying into that are particularly popular? I mean, we think of things like farm shops and selling direct to the public. Are there any that have proved more popular?
Certainly from our research, there were a number of standout areas. So we could see that 66% of farmers were using their land for biodiversity activities such as carbon capture or tree planting. That was followed by 43% who were looking to sell new products directly, such as cheese making with it. There was a regular subscription coming through for community supported agriculture, 38%. A number had now started to support farming markets, around 35%. And then finally, coming in the sort of top five was trying to increase tourism onto the farm. And around 25% over the last few years have embraced holiday cottages or glamping.
There seems to be quite a variety, but I guess it depends on your individual farm, doesn't it? Where you are, what you're farming, how much land you've got, how much money you want to invest.
Absolutely. And I think coming through all of the research that we saw, that a lot of these were therefore community based, as in if it was relevant to the local community and if there was that opportunity to sell direct, then that was being looked at by the farmers that we surveyed. And obviously that is a hugely, I think it's a very positive, because it's cutting down on the miles that the food is being transported. But at the same time, it's also bringing people who perhaps wouldn't be as familiar with farming practices onto farms, into shops, and seeing the produce sold very close to where it was produced.
What are the risks involved? Let's say I'm an arable farmer, I've got a couple of spare acres and I want to diversify into something. What are the risks involved in taking that big jump?
I think one of the areas that we were picking up from the surveys that we carried out was A, ensuring that they had proper expertise within it, that they were getting good advice as well. And I think there is a concern, full stop, that we picked up from across the farming communities, that they are having to take on increased debt. Now, a positive from that is we got an awful lot of evidence that there was a focus on ensuring they can find grants and subsidies to help offset the debt. But I would say that is a clear risk. If you get your strategy wrong, and if you've taken on additional debt, clearly that could have longer term consequences.
One of the farms that I spoke to, which has turned part of their farm into an attraction, a day out, and very successfully they are too, said certainly in the first year or two when you're doing something, you've got to be in a position where the existing farm can keep you going. Don't put, I guess, all your eggs in one basket.
Yes, and I think that's kind of very sensible. Through the communication and the survey work we were doing, we got a real sense of people bringing additional into their existing farming arrangements rather than starting completely from scratch into something new. And I think that is a very broadly sensible way of doing things, to kind of to see if you can actually make it a success, but you then have the fallback of your existing and current farming arrangements as well.
If somebody's sat here listening to this and thinking, yeah, I've got a bit of an idea for a diversification, where do they start? You know, you've got a blank piece of paper and you may be sat there with the family or your partners or whatever. Where do you start this process?
What we found is that a lot of farmers were looking at their own community and taking advice from them as well. It is quite a challenge, because I think you do move away from what could be a good idea to then trying to put it into reality with it. I think on the financial side, it's very possible to try and reach out and get some good, hopefully, financial advice, either from your existing advisors or your bank. Certainly, a number of, particularly around grants and for survey applying, we were quite heartened by the fact that not, I think it was 97% were getting some form of help when applying for those grants with it. A consultant, an advisor. A lot of them were also talking to family members who perhaps have got advice previously, or an employer, or again, speaking to the local community or farming organisations with it. So I think there is plenty of help out there on surveys and grants. But then I don't think the farming community would be afraid to reach out to a professional advisor as well, particularly on the financial side and around debt advice as well.
It's also, I guess, important to let the head rule the thing rather than the heart, isn't it? It's all very well and good having this wonderful theory that you're going to make your fortune doing X, Y, Z. But at the end of the day, you've got to pay the bills. And somebody said to me again over the last few days, you've got to keep close to the numbers. You've got to understand where the books are and whether you're actually making a business out of whatever it is that you're actually doing. But be realistic about things.
Absolutely. I think with any entrepreneurial venture, it probably does start in the heart. You may have a real desire to do something, but we got a real sense that there was a genuine pragmatism from the farming community about seeking advice, about seeking help. And I think absolutely it's so important when you are starting on any new business venture to ensure that you do create a good business plan, to ensure you do look to cost it out as well as you can do, to ensure you look at others who've perhaps tried something similar to see what the pitfalls were with that. It's very hard to be foolproof. And we do know that sadly, not just in farming, but in other businesses, a number of businesses fall. But we took a real heart from the fact that the farming community were really seeking to do this in a professional manner as possible.
So let's talk about advice. You say talk to others, talk to family, talk to friends, talk to people who've done it before. But there are, like yourself, and let's give you due credit, organisations that will offer professional advice. What kind of advice would you be able to give?
Whether it be a farm or or any client, we would always sit down with them and try and look at the full picture of their life. That will include some hard facts about the finances, and it will be going through a sort of an assessment of what they've got, what they earn. We'll then be looking at what they're hoping to achieve. At Investec Wealth, we are able to give good qualified advice on a large range of areas. But we're also very good at working with other professionals if we can't. So that would be solicitors or accountants as well. But once you've got that picture of what they're trying to achieve, once you've had a look at perhaps their business plan, you'll be able to make a more accurate sense of can we help them achieve some of their goals. The farming community are looking to be able to grow and develop their businesses. Ultimately, there's a huge passion that we got from these surveys about what they do. But at the end of the day, there are individuals with families, with desires to sort of take their earnings forward to be able to maintain their lifestyles with them.
And sometimes just a fresh pair of eyes to be able to look at something dispassionately, and your head is going to rule that you've not got the heart involved in it. I know you want somebody to be successful, but there are times when you might need to sit with somebody and say, I'm not sure this is the right thing.
Absolutely. And our aim with all of our clients would become the trusted advisor. And as your trusted advisor, you are expected to give very good, open and sound advice. If that was that, regrettably, this wouldn't be possible because of the circumstances an individual finds themselves in, it would absolutely be our job to be able to do that with them.
Scott, thank you very much for this information. It's been very, very useful and a lot of good advice there. Where would somebody go if they wanted to talk to you or one of your colleagues?
Thank you, Steve. Probably the best place for them is to check out our website, investec.com. Within there, you will be able to go to the Investec Wealth and Investment UK part of the website, and there you'd find your local office where you can contact them directly just by clicking through. And then one of our advisors from that office would be back in contact with you so you could have a further discussion.
Scott Jones, Divisional Director, Investec Wealth and Investments. Thank you so much for joining us on the Farming Programme this morning.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a pleasure.
Many thanks to Investec, both for their research and for coming on the programme, although it would be wrong not to point out that other business advisors are available. I'd still like to hear your diversification stories, good or bad. Drop me an email to farming@hitsradio.co.uk. And if you missed last week's chats with the Lincolnshire farmers who've diversified successfully, you can hear the interviews on any podcast platform. Search The Farming Programme or on the Hits Radio Lincolnshire website. Coming up, we'll see how the markets are doing and what the weather's going to do. Plus, the latest rural crime figures are in, and they don't look good. We'll hear from the police next.
The Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
The latest set of rural crime figures are in and they don't look good again. NFU Mutual reports rural crime cost Lincolnshire £2.5 million last year, an increase of 13% over 2022. Nationally, the figure is over £50 million, with GPS systems the favourite item stolen. Quad bikes, ATVs and, of course, livestock theft numbers all continue to be high. The Farming Programme's Charlotte Lineker spoke first to Inspector Chris Davis from Lincolnshire RCAP, the Rural Crime Action Team.
We did some work earlier this year with the national team and looked at what was going on. We did some work with them. We did make some arrests and we have got some people on bail in relation to that, which has started to see a reduction in that going on around the country. We are looking into theft of plant and machinery and trying to reduce that as well.
And is there any particular places, I know you've mentioned there, obviously items that seem to be targeted, but any places as well, or is it kind of, it can be anywhere?
It's kind of county-wide, and that's one of the main things, isn't it? Lincolnshire is a huge county within the country, and so when we do see these increasing values of thefts, well, it's going to happen with Lincolnshire being so large and us trying to cover that area. But we really need to know where these things are taking place so that we can focus on them, and because it's so sporadic. And we are seeing organised crime coming into the county, committing offences, and then moving back out again. So we might see a month where we see a sudden increase in thefts of certain types of items, and then it drops off again. So it's hard to do, but we work with the rural crime team nationally, and also NFU and other organisations to work with them to make sure we can focus on these items that are going missing around the county.
People that will hear this and may feel understandably concerned by it, I suppose, what advice would you give to them about this?
For me, I would say, please let us know what's going on. If you just have a small theft on your farm or your rural location, let us know, because we need to know where criminal activity is taking place so we can focus on it. I'd say talk to us. We can give security advice, as can our partners such as NFU and other agencies. They can give you advice on what you need to be doing to secure your properties to make sure your items are kept safe. We see fuel thefts, we see breaks into containers. A lot of that comes from people going around the county doing things and seeing things. And one of the things we do clamp down on is Op Galileo and hair coursing. We know a lot of these people involved in that are connected to organised crime and some serious criminals. Well, them coming onto your farmland, your rural location, going after hares, that then leads to them seeing property and coming back later to attack that and steal that. So that's why we've hit that really hard. And we've managed to reduce that. I think it was 2021 to 2022, there was 1,900 calls to police, and we've got it down really low to just over 200 now. So we're making a difference. We are putting banning orders in place to stop them coming back to the county, so they can't be wandering around your farmyard saying they're looking for hares or hare coursing, looking for the dogs, when in actual fact they're also probably scoping out your yard to try and steal property. And one of the things is GPS thefts. We know that when they hit our county, because like I say, they're organised crime, they go around the country hitting different areas, they'll hit our county, take some GPSs, and then they'll come back a few months later and go for those same victims. So I'd say, if you have been hit, talk to us, we'll give you advice. And same with it, I think NFU will do the same. They'll give advice on the best way to secure your property, your equipment, and make sure we can try and deter people from coming back again.
And when it comes to that advice, are there any particular measures that you feel everyone should have or everyone should implement? Any specifics? It's fine.
CCTV, always good. Some good locks. Making sure we've got some sort of warnings through to us. So if you've got something that will trigger off, an alarm will trigger off, and you can let us know straight away, we can get people to you. Yes, we're a big rural county, but like I say, the rural crime team works within specialist operations. We have cars out and about in the countryside all the time, 24/7. Although the rural crime team only works for a small part of that, the rest of the bigger department works 24/7, and we can get to people. So if we know that somebody's triggered something in a farmyard over part of the county, we can get vehicles there and we can start trying to locate them and deal with them.
Charlotte also spoke to retired NFU County Chair Nick Dowler from Potter Hanworth for his advice and asked if he was surprised by the latest figures.
Not really, no. It is one of those things that isolated farms seem to be a bit of a target these days. And obviously, there's more and more expense falling on the farmer to think more and more security-mindedly. Camera companies must be doing ever so well at the moment, because most farms now are forced into having some sort of camera security on their property. Putting your tractor and a wooden shed just doesn't work these days. Machinery is so expensive, it's obviously worth taking a risk to steal it. And things like the GPS as well, very difficult to protect. Young farmer I know had five taken from his tractors, and that was a real blow to him. He'd just taken over management of a farm, and he felt responsible for that. He was really upset by it and was disappointed that the police didn't even make a visit to the farm. They'd simply gave him a crime number. The chances of catching them, very, very small. But nonetheless, for his own mental state of mind, it would have been helpful. And I think this is something to think about. It's not necessarily monetary value, although that is obviously a critical point, but it's the mental impact on the farmers and families that are hit, because they're vulnerable. They're out in the middle of nowhere and can at any time be struck again. In fact, they all start to think, oh, crumbs, you know, they've been once. They'll be probably coming back when they know I've got the new gear. They'll sort of search for it and attack me again. So I feel mental health is a vital part of this. It's not just monetary.
I suppose also having that kind of domino effect on what you can do and when you can do it as well, and how effectively.
Well, yes, it is. And sometimes it's quite sort of personal when you think if it's livestock that's stolen. Yeah, I know lots and lots and lots of sheep, but some sheep are more valuable than others in that they might be breeding stock. But some are actually not pets. We don't have pets, but we have certain sheep that we've had a few years. They know our routines. They produce great lambs, for example. In my own case, I've got certain ewes and a certain ram that are as important, really, as a dog, but not quite, obviously. But the sheep, to me, are important. And if those few were stolen, I'd be quite upset by it.
What are some of the things that you do to try and protect yourself from things like this happening? But what would you suggest other farmers do as well?
I suggest you always have a well-charged phone with you. You approach anything that looks unusual very carefully. Any doubts at all that something is not quite right, ring somebody. If it's the police, because you think it might be serious, yes. But warn somebody else, maybe somebody at home. If you've got a mate down the road, say, I think something dodgy is going on here. Do not approach what could be a dangerous situation yourself. It's keeping other people around you, your near neighbours and everybody, fully in the picture. So if there is something going on locally, all the farming community in your area know what's happening. So communication is key to this, I think.
Well, it continues to be very worrying, and it's a sad fact that we need to take all these precautions, but there are some very unsavoury characters out there. Thanks to Charlotte, Nick and Chris.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock, and from Mason's Rural at Louth, auctioneer Edward Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. This week, prime steers all in average 283.64 pence per kilo, and prime heifers all in average 281.3 pence per kilo. Top price in the steers in the pence per kilo were J&S Brooks of Strubby at 309, and in the pounds per head were F. Wallace and Son of Biscathorpe at £1,851.35. In the heifers, both the pence per kilo and the pounds per head went to J.C. Scully of Bournemouth at 299.5 pence per kilo, and in the pounds per head at £1,731.30. Moving on to the sheep, this week we had an exceptional trade for all weights and grades with an SQQ of 325.17 pence per kilo and an all-in average of £136.63. The SQQ flies miles ahead of many other Monday outlets. Top price this week, pence per kilo at 378, went to Tom Bingham of Oxton. Top price per head went to Shaw Brothers of Binbrook, which topped at £174 for a 60 kilo lamb. That concludes the prime lambs. Just a few cool news about this week. Numbers in very short supply, but trade pretty much on fire. An average this week of £112.54. The top price this week went to P.A. Smith of Louth at £178. Shaw Brothers of Binbrook sold Suffolks to 145 and 144. Mules this week topped at 102 for S. Cosgrove and Sons of Haynton. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Edward. And with a look at the grain markets this week, Open Fields, Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. The grain markets have continued to make slow progress this week. We still sit in this 190 to 195 area that we've become accustomed to in the last couple of weeks. The trend is the same. The European markets spend much of the first half of the day trying to make gains, only to be pegged back mid-afternoon when the US markets get going. Any fresh news over the last couple of days? Not really. This week, the AHDB ran a report regarding the Russian wheat values. They do seem to have bottomed out, which is good news for you and I. Turkey, we know, are still not importing anything until mid-October, so this could be a concern, but we are likely to see some demand in the coming days. It has been reported that firstly, Algeria will be in for a tonnage, possibly 50k or more, and then following on from them, a potential big one. Egypt have launched a tender for 3.8 million tonnes spread between October and April with extended payment terms. With that sort of tonnage, perhaps not all of it will be covered, but it will be very interesting to see what happens in the coming days, as news of any results could certainly affect global markets. Results are expected early next week on this one. With regards to the grain market, it's currently all focused on the funds and the US. Here is the main issue, the US crop production forecasts. Currently, the crop condition numbers look superb. Less than 5% of the US corn area is in drought. Forecasts look favourable. There are now some commentators who are predicting a bumper corn crop to come in the autumn. Thankfully, US maize and wheat is now competitively priced, but they, like the rest of us, will need demand and plenty of it in the coming months to shift the global needle. Close to home, I'll quickly run through some physical numbers on what's been cut so far. It is by no means very scientific, but probably sensible comments. Group 1s, broadly speaking, bushel weights are fine, as are Hagbergs. The issue here will clearly be protein. The trend is low, but not exclusively low. Skyfall averages around 12.4, Zayat 12.0, and Crusoe the highest at over 13. Some of this might be due to yield, but I don't have enough evidence to confirm this. Group 2s, all proteins here too, but palladium is throwing much higher protein numbers the next days at this stage. Spring malting barley seems to be the champagne crop at this stage. Nitrogens are extremely low. Premiums because of this have dropped significantly as buyers run for the hills, but I think it's important to note that most of the spring barley was not drilled in January and February. We will have only seen 10 to 15% of the crop so far, in my view. I think we might need to revisit this summary in 2 or 3 weeks' time when a lot more of the barley is cut. In all the sampling I have done so far, I have found ergot in nearly everything. It is simply too early to know how each individual mill is going to play this, but we will no doubt find out more in the next month. Oilseed rape has had quite the rollercoaster this week. With another good day on Thursday, we will probably finish, quite remarkably, with an unchanged position for the week. Some guide prices for the week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, August 175 to 185, September 185 to 195, February 190 to 200, with Group 1 milling premiums holding between £60 and £70. Feed barley, September 135 to 145, November 150 to 160, and oilseed rape, September 380 to 390, and November 385 to 395. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
A couple of days of heavy rain this week, Monday and Thursday. Patchy sun for the rest of the week. Daytime highs in the low to mid-20s Celsius. And winds light and variable to start the week, but picking up and gusting from the southwest by Thursday and Friday. Quick congratulations to Taryn Lee and colleagues. You may remember we brought you details of their trip around the coast of Great Britain in June in a JCB Fast Track, raising funds for the Farm Safety Foundation and their Mind Your Head campaign following the loss of Louth young farmer Alec Newlove. Well, the grand total raised was a staggering £12,331. A brilliant effort by all those involved, and thank you to everyone who contributed. See, Taryn, it was worth all the effort. Next week, we'll hear about a new environmental farmers group in North Lincolnshire and a clever device to keep your tractor on the straight and narrow. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. BSI ISO 9001 accredited.